world. My name is Klaus Wasten, and I'm the director of the College of Extraordinary Experiences. You're listening to the Business of Extraordinary Experiences. Today is another Corona talk, this time about how it has impacted the business of consulting. With me today, I have a man who has an unhealthy amount of airline frequent flyer miles, has been a consultant for over 20 years, and is something of a domain expert when it comes to customer experience. He has a past in airlines, and he's been the director of strategic business consulting at Genesis since the mid-90s. Not the mid-90s, the mid-zeros. Let's not make it wilder than it is, because it's still wild enough. I want you all to give a warm welcome to Mark Stanley. Mark, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Klaus. Wow. It's funny that you say that. Now, when you put it in that kind of perspective, I realize just how much traveling I have done through the years. Oh, my goodness. It's millions of miles.
It's millions, right?
So here's a little small sidebar. There's a website that I go to where I try. You know, everybody has their illnesses, right? My illness is I track all the places that I travel. And I do that because then it populates this world map thing and I can see all the places that I've been. And one of the things that it does is it calculates the miles that you've traveled and how much of your life you've spent on an airplane and all the rest of it. Ooh. And it turns out that I have been to the Earth, from the Earth to the moon and back, something like 5 times.
Wow. So you're basically a qualified astronaut based on that mileage.
Well, I've been accused of being out of space more than once, but not for the reasons you think.
We'll just let that one stand as itself. Mark, I want to dive right into what we're here to talk about today. Consulting, okay. Corona. Yeah. First, I want to hear about you, and then I want to hear your take on the business as a whole. But how has your life been since things went crazy?
Well, yeah, also crazy, but crazy busy in a very different way than it would be for a lot of people. Specifically, the kind of thing that I do is focused largely in working with companies that are in the customer service space. And so a lot of what I've been working on for the last couple of months is helping these companies transition their staff to be able to work remotely, work from home, and things like that. And so you can imagine, you know, I've got one healthcare customer, for example, that when this hit, they can't bring people into a building. And so now they've got 40,000 people that by Tuesday at 3 o'clock need to be set up to work from home. So how do you do that, right? Wow. So, I mean, it's that. And you know, part of it is, it's not just a technology play. That's a huge piece of it. How do I get you set up with the stuff that you need to, you know, have a computer and a telephone line and all that? But also, how do you operationalize that? If I'm used to seeing you in an office every day and now you're at home, how do I do that? How do I manage that? So there's a whole conversation around how you run a business in a completely new way.
That 40,000, that's a lot. That is not, I mean, one thing is I ran a remote company. We had people in 10 different countries. And when we were at our highest, we were about 50. That was complex enough. I don't even want to dream about what 40,000 looks like.
Can you imagine? I was talking to the guy over in procurement. He's like, yeah, when I had to call and place the order for 40,000 headsets, can you imagine being on the receiving end of that order?
They must be like, okay. And you should, okay. That, yes, it has the right amount of, yes, we'll get right on it, sir.
Yeah. We must have a bad connection. Could you say that again?
And I guess there are these stories happening at this time. But yeah, you're one of those who've been smart or lucky or positioned to kind of, as you said when we talked earlier, to work 14-hour days right now. But there's a lot of the consulting industry that's been hit pretty damn hard because it's the planes and the kind of the shoes in the room, the suits in the room, so to speak. They're no longer allowed into the room and they can't get on the planes.
That's right. So it's interesting that you put it in that way, because you're right. My entire professional career has been spent doing, you know, probably 25% of my time is face-to-face dealing with people just like you in a conference room and a whiteboard and working out ideas and how are we going to design this experience and all the rest of it. And then the other part of the time would be, okay, then I'll go back to my home office and figure this all out and then come back and see you again at some point a couple weeks down the road and say, okay, here's what we came up with. I don't get to do that anymore. And one of the challenges that you have and I'm sure you've seen this as well in your line of work. If I'm in the same room as you, I can begin to do things like gauge your body language. I can tell if I'm starting to flesh out an idea based on how much interest you express in that. Are you looking at the idea on the whiteboard, or are you looking at your mobile phone? Do you suddenly excuse yourself to go to the restroom and then take 30 extra minutes and not come back because you found something more interesting? I can gauge that if I'm with you in a conference room, and I can adjust my style on the fly, because part of what I'm trying to do is be hypersensitive to your level of engagement, because that tells me how successful this is going to be. If I'm trying to do this now over a Zoom meeting, I can partly do that, but you know what? There's an expectation that if I'm doing this over a Zoom meeting that you've got your camera on. And if you don't have your camera on, I can't see what you're doing, right? Now, I think that the flip side of that is that even when people, and now if the Zoom camera is on, I'm looking you in the eye the entire time. And so the flip side of this is that what I have to be acutely sensitive to is exhaustion. It's really hard to be on all the time. So how do you do that and then find the right balance and still remember what our mission was? We're still trying to design an experience here, but I'm having to find a new way of doing it on the fly. It's the analogy, we're building the rocket ship and we're halfway to the moon. So how do you do this? And there's no book on this. You just jump in.
And I agree wholeheartedly. And we're even cheating for the purpose of this podcast to make our lives easier, that while all our listeners will only have our voices, we actually have an open Zoom connection. So there's a little bit of body language and a little bit of eye contact and some nice virtual backgrounds just to make our lives easier. But for those listening, there's not even that. It's more of a phone conversation sort of style. And that's right. And that's with a few people. I mean, Zoom, for example, works decently well if you're just two people. It's a pretty good one-on-one tool, but a meeting with five people or with 10 people, it's crazy. It's the translation from live to digital is, let's just say it's bad at best if you're trying to directly translate.
Well, doesn't that also bring back the idea that somehow, I don't know about you, but for me, it also causes me to step back and say, well, how many people are we inviting to this meeting? Mm-hmm. I mean, when you think about just the entire concept, even when we were doing face-to-face of doing introductions, if it's just you and me, we can get through hello and shake hands and do all that pretty quickly. When we add a third person and a fourth person and a fifth person, and then to your point, a lot of the meetings that I'm on, in fact, I have one later on coming up this morning, and I think there are 30 people invited to this whole thing. It'll take us a half an hour just to get through introductions.
Mm-hmm. And then you have to get through the fact that everybody who's at a meeting in a physical space, they know how to sit on a chair. They are aware of the concept of a chair. But when you come to a digital space, you'll have people who, metaphorically speaking, they don't even know there's such a thing as a chair. And if you're like, oh, but just use the chair, Derek, it's going to be fine. You just sit on the chair. It'll be less hard for your ass. And then Derek will sit on the chair. But in a digital meeting, Derek will be like, what, how do I do that? Where do I do the thing? How does it work? What's an echo sound? What is a feedback loop you're talking about? Oh, I'm muted. What's this? And we're gaining this digital, not even going to call it literacy, but this like digital meeting competency. And for some people, it's an extension of what they do already. But for others, it's like a complete new experience, and they're at the chair level. They need to know there's a thing like a chair.
Well, and think about what you've just said. If part of what we're doing when we're in person, and you and I have done this personally together in the past, is if we're going to do things like rapid prototyping, if we're going to do co-creation, if I'm with you in a room, it's very easy for us to do that. I can say, stand here.
Yeah, exactly. Right? Exactly. I love that. Yes, stand
but if
here.
If I'm trying to do this over a Zoom meeting, imagine if you will, mm-hmm. right? And the minute that I say that, I just ran a really high risk that I lost you.
Yeah, and I think to build on that, and you must have seen this as well, is that if you're in a live situation, somebody gets up and talks. 10 people are sitting in the audience, one person's talking, there may be a whiteboard involved, but 10 minutes can feel like a long time, but it's not that long because you're sitting there and you can like check out the decor of the room and you can whisper to the person next to you, and you can move around in your chair. And it takes a long while before you actually take out your phone and kind of actively disengage. When you're on a digital connection, you are 1 second away from opening your email or another browser tab. You are 2 seconds away from just completely losing focus at all times.
Yeah, so I think one of the things that I've really tried to do, even before when I was in a conference room with people, is I'm constantly reading the room. I want to know, if you're here, I have to assume you got invited for a reason. I want to understand that reason really well before the meeting or the event starts, because I'm trying to figure out why you're in this room. And then what I'm going to do is I'm not going to give you a chance to pull out your mobile phone and check your email. I am going to find a way, the minute that I even see you looking for the mobile phone, I'm going to call on you. And I'm going to say, do you remember that thing we talked about in the hallway earlier this morning? And suddenly that person is, I brought them right back in. Now on a Zoom meeting, I have to try a little harder than that, because I've got to, you know, as we said a minute ago, if I've got 15 people in this Zoom session, I've got to be reading the cameras on all 15 people to see who's not engaged. And then I have to say, Klaus, do you remember last week that email that you sent me? And so now what you've done after I've called out a couple of people like that, now they all sort of know, oh, well, I probably shouldn't look away because I could be next. But it's, I mean, and so yes, there's that evil intent behind it, just to keep people from disengaging. But it also forces me as the facilitator to really say, well, back to that original point, why are you here? Mm-hmm. Because if I don't have a reason to bring you into conversation, then I can just dismiss you and you can go on about your day.
Let's talk about some of the pluses for a moment, because there are, of course, some huge advantages to the kind of digital situation. Tell me of some of the things that you've seen in the last couple of months and that you've like implemented and done where you're like, wow, why didn't we do this before? We had the tools, we just didn't have the motivation or the default position. Tell me of the cool stuff.
Yeah, there's a bunch of them. So I'll try to be brief about this. But first of all, the whole notion of allowing people to work from home is something that I've been keenly working on for at least 20 years now, because the technology has been there to permit that. But when you go in and talk to most employers about that notion, you would immediately get this pushback that would say, that's not possible. If I can't see you, I can't trust you. I've got to be able to keep an eye on you to know what you're up to all day long. And we keep saying to them, that's not true. And I would run experiments with people. So here we're talking about doing rapid prototyping. So here would be an example. If you go into a call center, there's a thing on the wall there called a wall board that shows how many calls are in queue and agents talking and average wait time and all that sort of thing. And so the reason that they put that up there is because there's this idea that somehow if I'm an agent there and I can see that, it will cause me to not goof off and go on to the next phone call. So keep it going, right? And so I would typically walk up to a supervisor, one of these supervisors who's telling me, I can't let you work from home because if I can't see you, I can't trust you. And I would say, don't look up. Do not look up. Tell me, what's your service level right now? Dead silence. They have no idea. I would say to them, you had a report delivered to you this morning that had yesterday's statistics on it. What did it tell you about how we're doing this week in terms of conversion rates? Dead silence. You're the one that just got there telling me that you're right on top of this at all times, and you have no idea what service level is this week. You have no idea how many conversions we have. So tell me again why we can't let these people work from home. And so then suddenly COVID comes along, and we have no choice. We have to let you work from home. And one of the weird things that turns out is that not only does it work, but when we look at the actual utilization rates from people that are working from home, it's off the charts.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Of course.
So I think that's the first one, is that we're finding that it works much better than we ever thought was possible. Now, what's really interesting then is if you get to the right people in an organization, they're taking a step back saying, well, then, if we wanted to bring people back to the office and we had to maintain physical distance between people, we can't do it with what we have. So we're either going to have to build more offices or only bring half as many people in at a time. How are we going to make this work? And then that's immediately followed by, but why would we want to? Why are we spending a third of our overhead here on office space when I could just let you work from home, right? So there are several really interesting conversations that are being spawned out of this whole thing that are causing people to really rethink this. The third and final one that I'll toss out there too is that before, if I brought you into an office, from a scheduling standpoint, I pretty much had to find stuff to keep you busy for 8 consecutive hours. And the reality is that what that really meant is that there's loads of inefficiency built into that. And I just accept that. That's part of my overhead. But if you can work from home, what would happen now if I did something like ride-sharing Uber-type services and said, I'm only going to use you when I need you. You tell me when you're available and I'll find something for you to do. And if it turns out I had a spike in volume right now, I'll charge my customer more, I'll pay you more, but somehow we'll meet in the middle. And now suddenly what you have is I'm scheduling people by preference when you really want to work, when you're available. Because if I want to put my kid down for a nap or something like that right now and I really don't want to be in the office and I don't want to be available, well, go ahead. Right? And so what it's now forced this whole thing, it's forced us to do is completely rethink the way we work.
I like that. That was a very comprehensive and pretty damn interesting answer. That's I'm cogitating or what it, a smart word for when you're absorbing knowledge, but very, very interesting. While I think up a new angle or a new question, throw something my way. And
well, so I've got several things I've been dying to ask you. When you, from your angle, think about, and we've talked a little bit about this so far, the whole idea of creating experiences. If we were to have had this conversation last September at the castle, and we were talking about how we were going to create experiences, there would be a whole discussion around how we would do that. How do you create experiences now, knowing that we can't physically bring people together, at least not now, and probably not for a while, and knowing that safety is going to be, and when I say safety, I don't necessarily mean safety in the sense of we've got to be on high ground, but in the sense that safety from a health standpoint, I've got to factor that into anything that we're trying to do. When you think about that and you think about designing experiences going forward, what kinds of things are you putting down on paper and thinking about, well, how are we going to do this and not say, gosh, the days of experiences are over, because they're not. I would submit to you that this is a brand new chapter. So I'm curious to know what your thoughts are on that.
So on this, we're doing a little bit of stuff on this right as it is, but I think the core thing is the worst thing you can do is just translate. It's a little bit like when movies started hitting big time, then you had the theater directors who just put a camera on their theater production. And that worked, but not that well. But the real people who made the revolution happen were those who looked at movies as a separate and new medium instead of just theater on screen. And I think we're seeing that here as well with digital, whether you're designing theater or you're designing sports events or it's escape rooms or conferences, you need to first unlearn what you have learned. And that is damn, damn hard. So that's like the first thing is you need to kind of look at it from a fresh perspective instead of saying, how do I take my current workshop or my current offering and kind of digitize that? Because that's hard. Second is, I think that people underestimate how much physical things you can actually do in a digital meeting. And I'm going to grab an example from our School of Incredible Experiences, which is a new way for kids to learn. And part of that is that they have a mix between storytelling from a storyteller who's like on a Zoom connection and is talking to them and showing them pictures and playing music. So like an interactive story, like a Dungeons and Dragons session over Zoom, essentially, but also using physical actions. So if the pirate captain says, bring me a new drink, the kids run off into their kitchens and mix a drink and come back and show it to the storyteller on the screen. And when the pirates say, we don't think you're real pirates, the kids need to demonstrate they know what a Savoy knot is by actually taking physical rope or a piece of string in their homes and demonstrating in front of the camera that they can tie the right knot. So and this, of course, is in the entertainment space, but when you do things, you can do more than you think. And one of the things we're trying to pioneer, this is an application I sent to the Danish Arts Council not long ago, we're still waiting for an answer, which is to bring theater into people's living rooms. And the idea there is that if you take your big screen TV that you have as like the altar of any house, most houses at least, especially in kind of Europe / America, then you plug in a laptop. So you now have a internet connection, a webcam facing the living room, and a big screen TV that is the screen of that laptop. Then at the other end of it, there's an actor or a storyteller, and the storyteller can now see the living room. So if you want to do Hamlet, then you're doing Hamlet both by visual acting, by audio storytelling, by music, by pictures, but even better, you can say, so family that's in the room, it starts to rain, you need to find shelter. And they need to take their sofa cushions and the drapes of their curtains, and they need to create shelter from the rain. And they need to change their physical habitat to fit the story. So if somebody says, you need to build a tower, or you need to serve me a medal on a pillow, like a ceremony, then they need to physically do that to satisfy kind of the camera, because you can use that as a way to create interactive storytelling. And again, we're still in the entertainment perspective here. We're not in the business conference, but it doesn't take much to take that and take it kind of to a more business corporate level. The idea of mixing the physical and the digital. A simple thing I did when I opened the meeting, I said, good, for this meeting, the dress code is going to be Hong Kong bar, upscale Hong Kong bar. So you now have 90 seconds to find your costume. And when we started, and everybody had their cameras off at the beginning of the meeting, so when we started, everybody sees each other in some sort of whatever they could find from their closets in 90 seconds with this Hong Kong as their kind of as their guideline. And suddenly it's energetic. Suddenly it's fun. Even with nothing more than saying, let's just use 90 seconds on doing something fun and physical before we start the meeting.
But you've touched on a really critical point here that I don't want to lose sight of. Our mutual friend Johannes had a wonderful post last week on our Facebook wall. And the gist of it was exactly what you've just said. A big part of the problem is that there's a lack of an alternate narrative. And that alternate narrative is the one that provides the framework for us to have this conversation. We're so stuck in the way that we've done things always since the beginning of time, that the minute I come along and do what you've just said there, which is you've got 90 seconds to go and do this, people say, but that's not how this works. It is now.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Right? So how do we create the framework around an alternate narrative and say to people, no, actually, that is how it's going to be? Right? I love that as a concept because it really says, how do we move people away from, you know, being a tree hugger and get you to a point where it's a new day?
I think I wish I had good answers to that also weren't asshole answers, but I only have asshole answers. So let's stick with those.
Well, you're with friends. It's okay. See, we understand you.
The people listening, you'll have to forgive me. No, I think the way to change that is you do it in spaces that you control. One of the things we do at the College of Extraordinary Experiences is we do a lot of stuff that just wouldn't fly in a lot of different spaces, right, to people who would flat out reject that if we came to their home turf. But since we've defined the turf, I mean, here they have to go to Berlin and take a strange bus for 5 hours, and then they arrive at a castle. It's pretty clear that we are the ones controlling the rules. So people accept that and they see it can be done, and then they take it home with them in some form or the other. And I think doing that digitally, that's also a way. So that's number one is you do it in spaces you control and let it kind of filter outwards. And the second is you try and try and try to hit the big players. I've spent most of my adult life preaching the glories of live action role play, but I can guarantee you that the fact that Disney sent some people on a study trip to one of our events, or several of them actually, and they implemented some of what we did and some of our ideas into the framework that is the Star Wars Galaxy's Edge theme park, that has a much better, bigger effect than anything that I or my ex-colleagues in the Nordic LARP movement ever did. Because once Disney picks up on what you're doing, then you're making real change. So I think that's the key thing.
I'm sure Christy Cleveland is getting a smile out of that one.
I think so as well. So I think the thing is to take spaces you control and then find the big players and get them excited. Because once you do something at a workshop, then some people there are going to take that and say, hey, this Mark guy, that was pretty cool, even though it was different. And then they're going to take it into their space.
Well, so when you think about what you've just said now and tie it all together, we have another mutual friend, Charles Michel, who mm-hmm. is this wonderful, famous chef. And he's just, he's an amazing guy. And I just love him to death. But one of the things that I think is fascinating about him is if we take all the things we've talked about today on this call, and if we look at things like safety, and we want an experience, and we're trying to figure out how we create this new framework and shift the paradigm and all that. And he did something recently that I thought was fascinating, where he recreated a seafood dinner. And it wasn't in a restaurant in Ecuador. In fact, what he did is he took people to the sea.
Okay.
And he put up a tent. And he put them at a table with their feet in the water. And he harvested things from the sea and prepared them right there.
I love that. So it's small.
It's intimate. It's safe. He can control the environment, like you said a moment ago. But think about that description that I've just given you. He has touched every sense that you have. The sight, the smell, the touch, the hearing of the ocean, the taste, and all that in one place to create this experience. And I love the idea that, you know, if you said to somebody, I want to do a seafood dinner, your first thought is going to be, it's going to be in a restaurant. And his mm-hmm. thought was, no, at the sea.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. No, I hear you. I mean, it's one of the things when I teach experience design, like 101 classes, one of the first things I tell people is start by the things that we assume. We're going to have a meeting. Who says the lights have to be on? Who says there are chairs? And at some point, of course, you get too much into form over function. And if the meeting is like in the dark, no chairs, and everybody's naked and you can't talk, then nobody remembers that it's a budget meeting because the form is too weird. Interesting, maybe.
Right.
Too weird.
Right.
But you can push it a little bit. I mean, Charles still had, he said, you're going to sit at the water. He didn't also say you're going to be naked and blindfolded. Because that would have
well, that he that's charges extra one. For that one. That's the next one, right?
That's Charles. You now have an idea. It's been sanctioned.
That's your new idea, and you got it free right here. Yeah. Well, and I think you know, just to top all of this off, you know, if you think about when we were all taking marketing in college and all that, one of the things they talk about is this notion of scarcity. I would submit to you, and I was talking recently to Joe Pine about this. I would submit to you that right now in June 2020, you know what, to me, the thing that is really the most scarce that people are dying for is human connection.
Mm-hmm. Agree.
That is, so part of what I want to try to do in my work right now is how do I never lose sight of the importance of human connection? Because that's the thing that I think we are all craving desperately right now that we want is just to be able to reach out and touch somebody and say, you're alive.
I think that is perhaps the most beautiful quote we can end on because we're nearing the half hour mark and we now have the quote mark and those two go very well together. See, I almost managed to pull off that joke. Not completely, but almost. It was like, it was there and then it crashed, but at least it flew first.
Well, but you know, in your line of work, what people always say is there's always post-production.
See, there's all, we'll take it in post. With that
we'll
said,
take it in post.
To all of our listeners out there, it has been a pleasure. Well, of course, I hope it's been a pleasure for you. For us, it definitely has. You have heard Mark Stanley and you have heard me, Klaus Foster. Thank you for listening.